Welcome to Pets Tell the Truth. This program is dedicated to understanding our animal companions on a deeper level. I'm Dr. Agnes Thomas, psychologist and animal telepathic communicator. I'll be your host as we listen to what our animal friends are saying and as we appreciate the way they view the world, their missions, and their spiritual insights. Tonight we're going to talk about one of their missions. The first part of the show, we will be discussing what goes into training a guide dog for the blind with our guest, Becky Barnes of Guiding Eyes for the Blind. The second part is reserved for listeners to call in with questions. The worldwide toll-free number is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And if you're in front of the computer right now listening, it should be on the screen. Today's show is brought to you by Garnett Publishing in Cleveland, Ohio. Garnett is calling for finished manuscripts, so if you have a manuscript that you would like to share and see in print, contact them at www.garnettpublishing.com or call them direct at 216-458-6100. They are the publisher of my book, Pets Tell the Truth, A Mystical Journey into the Animal Mind, which is available everywhere. And also our new publication, Animals Tell the Truth, Wisdom Cards. Tonight we're going to be discussing what goes into training a seeing eye dog for the blind. My guest tonight is Becky Barnes of Guiding Eyes for the Blind. Becky is the manager of consumer outreach and graduate support at the Eyes for the Blind. Becky will tell us about their training center and what raising one of these miraculous dogs is like. Welcome to the show, Becky.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Becky, would it be okay with you if I read this little bookmark that you sent me?
Sure.
Okay. Becky sent me something very interesting about guide dogs. Guide dogs mean safe travel, mobility, greater independence, and better employment prospects to many people who are blind. Guide dogs provide companionship and great emotional support. Guide dogs learn basic obedience, which is come, sit, down, and stay. But they also learn to stop at curbs and stairs. They avoid obstacles in their paths, and they learn to negotiate street crossings, elevators, public transportation, and any situation a person with sight might encounter. Each month, students who are blind or visually impaired come to Guiding Eyes for the Blind's Training Center for an intensive 26-day course to learn work with and to care for a guide dog. Lifetime follow-up service, that's lifetime, assures that graduates and their Guiding Eyes dogs continue to work well together. The cost to prepare each student and Guiding Eyes dog team for graduation is approximately $30,000. Wow. Yet, the dog's training, travel costs, room and board for 26 days, and follow-up support are all provided free of charge to our students. So, you are a nonprofit organization, is that right?
That's right. That's right. We receive a great deal of support from our direct mail program and individuals who regularly donate, you know, anywhere from, you know, $20 to thousands of dollars on a regular basis. We also have a foundations and grants department that you know, writes proposals to various foundations and corporations. And we have a planned giving program as well for people who might be interested in having guiding eyes in their estate planning.
Yes, that sounds like an excellent idea to me. I can't believe it costs $30,000.
Well, actually, I think maybe that's a little bit old news. It's actually closer to $40,000.
Oh, wow.
But when you think about the fact we breed our own dogs, and then they go through a puppy-raising process, which is done by volunteers, and they come back for training. We train somewhere around 160 guide dog teams a year. That means person and dog together.
Uh-huh.
And then provide lifetime follow-up. The application process requires assessment. There's a lot of travel involved. plus the whole room and board and transportation to and from the training center from anywhere in the United States and Canada and places further afield. So when you look at the figure, it's kind of daunting, you know, what you get for that is actually pretty amazing. And I am a guide dog user myself, so, you know, I can attest to what having the dog means in the life of a person who's blind or visually impaired.
Can you tell us just what your experience and your relationship is with your dog?
Yeah, I'm working now with my second dog, who's a black Labrador retriever named Flyer. And he and I have been together for 3 years. My first dog was a golden retriever named Rowan. And she worked with me for 8 years and then retired and became the ruler of the house, basically. And I've been blind all my life, but I didn't get my first guide dog until I was in my 40s. And for a variety of reasons, but I think primarily because I just didn't realize that this was an option that was really would really work well for me. And what I discovered when I learned to work with Rowan was a sense of confidence and freedom and trust that I had never really experienced before.
With an animal?
It didn't happen, well, even with people sometimes.
Oh.
But yeah, with an animal. It takes time, and it's a process of bonding that starts the minute you meet your dog for the first time. And it can take, you know, some people it takes up to 6 months or even longer for that bond to really, really be cemented. But the first time you pick up that harness when you're in class and walk down the street with the dog and realize, and that first obstacle that the dog goes around or the first curb or stairway that the dog stops at, your confidence starts to build, and you really have a sense of what this animal is doing for you. It's a remarkable experience. And some people's lives change pretty dramatically. Sometimes, you know, they don't change that dramatically on the surface, but inwardly, people's confidence levels change, you know, different things. In my case, a lot of things happened after I got Rowan. Some of which might have happened anyway. I started dating someone, we got married. That's probably not directly related to the guide dog, but fun story.
But it's a matter of self-confidence.
It really is. The sense that the things that I do, I didn't come to work for Guiding Eyes until 7 years ago. And the things that I do now, the traveling I do, I travel a lot. I go to a lot of exhibits and conferences, and I go places by myself that I might really not have been as comfortable doing before I had a guide dog. Part of it is that sense that, you know, the dog, yes, is following my commands, but is also making decisions on its own that keep me safe by going around obstacles, by learning where certain things are in a hotel, and just the companionship that you have when you're on the road and you're still never really alone.
And you're completely trusting that being, because it is a fellow being.
And the dog, you know, has a right to expect things from me. I you know, I give it all the love I can give it. I give it the best care I can give it. I get play time, rest. You know, the best food, all of those things. That's the least I can do for what this dog does for me.
Oh, my, yes. I've never talked to a Guiding Eyes dog personally, because when you see them on the street with their person, you don't want to interfere.
That's right.
But I have a friend that is a dog trainer, and she's an animal communicator, and she has talked to Guiding Eyes dogs. But they were mainly German Shepherds, and she says they are so dedicated to their job, they are so serious about what they're doing, and also that they volunteered to sort of surrender their life to this particular task, to helping a person move about in the world as if they had eyes, and they're so very dedicated to their person. And they're very proud of themselves that they can do this for them.
They are. It's true.
Tell us a little bit about what breed is generally used for training and what makes them so special that they can perform these jobs.
Well, initially, the first guide dogs, which really started, came to this country in the late 1920s, were German Shepherds.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of it has to do with their dedication. They're very smart. They like a challenge. They're very loyal. They're very single-minded. But as more guide dog schools came into being, they started looking at other breeds. German Shepherds do have some medical issues in the breed. And some people don't want to have to work quite as hard as you have to work to keep a German Shepherd happy as a guide dog.
Uh-huh.
And some people, you know, they need a dog that's a little more flexible maybe. So they started looking at Golden Retrievers and Labradors.
Uh-huh.
And an interesting thing that I heard this past weekend at a guide dog convention was that one of the reasons that German Shepherds became a little bit less used after World War II was because of the fact that they were German Shepherds, and that at that time in the world, anything that was German was considered
a negative.
Right, right. They tried calling them Alsatians for a while, and that's gone away now. German Shepherds are certainly viable as guide dogs, and there are guide dog handlers who will really don't want to work with anything but a shepherd. But Labradors tend to be a little bit sturdier. They tend to be, you know, a little bit more flexible. You know, if you want a lab to do something, you give it a lot of love and some food, and it's a happy dog.
Yes.
And they are very smart. You can focus them, and they learn easily. You can train a Labrador with a lot of love and praise and sometimes food rewards to help get things the way you want them. You never have to be, actually, guide dog trainers are never rough with dogs. So it's all about repetition followed by praise and reward and correction. If you see a guide dog being corrected, the correction is to refocus them from what you don't want them to do to what you do want them to do, and then praising them like crazy when they do it.
Right. Okay. Tell us, how are they raised and cared for? Obviously, they're not ready to be joined with their person for some length
of time.
A
while, right.
Tell us a little bit what is the training?
Well, Guiding Eyes Through the Blind has its own breeding program where we have a breeding colony of Labrador Retrievers as well as Golden and Golden Retrievers and Shepherds, and we're working with some crosses of Goldens and Labradors. They're born at our Canine Development Center, and they're there for the first 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks of their life. They evaluate the puppy for the first time at 7 weeks to see if it looks like it might have some of the qualities. And it's a very non-threatening test, but you're kind of looking for responses, fear responses. How's the dog react if you put it in the middle of a room, or if you show it something it's never seen before? Is it curious? You know, that kind of thing. And during that initial, after 6 weeks of age, we have what we call a puppy socialization program, where the puppies are getting used to being handled by human beings. There are volunteers who locally in this area, which is in New York State, who take puppies to their home for 3 or 4 days and have it with a pen, and they just have them in their home for a couple of days. And then somewhere around 8 to 10 weeks, they're assigned to a volunteer puppy raising family where they'll spend the next 14 to 16 months of their lives. And we have puppy raising families all up and down the East Coast, and we have a real strong region right there in Ohio in the Cuyahoga region.
Oh, that's where I am.
Yeah, they do a fabulous job. So the raisers teach the dog obedience, expose it to different things in the environment. As it gets older, as it gets up to, you know, a year or thereabouts, it gets what we call a puppy coat, which identifies it as a dog in training, and the puppy raiser can then take it into places where a guide dog user will probably be taking it when it becomes a working dog.
I see.
The puppy raisers, they give us an amazing gift because they take this dog into their home. They love it. They work with it. It's a very structured program that they work with to raise the puppy. They're not just left out there on their own. It's evaluated on a regular basis, and they have classes that they go to. So they've made quite a commitment to that dog and to the program for that year to year and a half. And then, you know, sort of like you send your children off to high school or college or off to a career, they send the dog off back here to Guiding Eyes to receive its formal guide training. So they give us an amazing gift.
For them to give up a beautiful dog like that?
It's hard, and we understand that it's hard, which is why we appreciate it so much. But they also get reports on how their dog is doing, and ultimately when the guide dog and the person finish training and have their graduation ceremony, the raisers are invited back to see their dog as a guide dog and to meet the person it's a teammate with.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
How does one become a puppy raiser? What criteria do you have?
Well, you know, it's everything from single people to family, to young families, to older couples, anybody in between. And if you're listening and you live on the East Coast of the United States or in the Cleveland area, and you're thinking you might like to raise a puppy, you can go to the website, which is CDC, which stands for Canine Development Center. So it's cdc.guidingeyes, cdc.guidingeyes.org. And all the information about puppy raising and the criteria are up there. You go through a training process, an evaluation process. There's an application, an assessment, and all kinds of things that the raisers go through. And you may start out working as a puppy sitter when a raising family, you know, is away for a couple weeks and needs to have the dog somewhere, or any number of reasons. But it's quite an evaluation process that raisers go through to make sure that they're emotionally ready to do it, that they're willing to make the commitment that's involved.
Mm-hmm. Cuyahoga County, where I live, we're very fond of dogs, especially. Mm-hmm. And we have lots of rescue groups for greyhounds. And we just have a lot of interest in dogs. Yesterday, I participated in an outdoor event, which I did last year as well, for a company called Great Lakes Brewing. It's one of the breweries here mm-hmm. in Cleveland, and they have a restaurant, and they have it outside, and they have a doggy menu, and you can go there for lunch with your dog, and the dog you can order for the dog off the dog menu, and you can order for yourself off the person menu. And it was so loaded. I mean, it was jammed. And it was so much fun for me to be there mm-hmm. to talk to the animals and to do readings and just to be among so many wonderful dogs that people were waiting 4 and 5 hours to get a table, but they were sitting outside. You know, it was a beautiful day.
Yeah.
And they were with their dogs and friends with their dogs. And it was just a wonderful scene. It was.
Right.
I wish it would be every week. It was so fun to go to.
That's great.
Can you describe for us a little bit how they are trained to guide the blind? Once they leave the puppy raiser's home, tell us a little bit about the program. Are they paired with their person first?
No. What happens is that they come back to Guiding Eyes and they have what they call an in-for-training test.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the test that evaluates if they appear to have what they need to become a guide dog.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dogs are assigned to teams of instructors. And each pair of instructors is assigned approximately 18 to 20 dogs that they're going to work with for the next 4 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then the instructors begin by teaching, just sort of getting to know the dogs, and then they introduce them to the harness that guide dogs wear, and then they teach them how to pull forward in the harness, because that's how a blind person follows the dog, is by the pull in the harness handle. And they gradually work with the dog and teach it more and more things in more complicated areas until ultimately they take the dogs down to Manhattan and work on buses and subways and so on.
Oh, my.
And each time the dog has learned a new task, then they just go on to the next thing. But it's all about repetition and reward, repetition and reward.
Okay, so
they'll set up obstacles for the dog to go around, and when the dog, you know, bumps them into an obstacle, then they have to go back and do it again. And when the dog gets it, then they move on to the next thing.
Is there any reason that a dog wouldn't qualify?
Well, there are traits in dogs that are really good for some things and not for others. A dog who's really sniffy and curious and's always got his nose to the ground might not make a great guide dog, but he might make a fantastic detection dog.
Oh, yeah.
So we have our release dogs are evaluated by a number of police agencies as well as the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency. And then dogs who, might be a little bit too, might have a lack of confidence. A dog really needs to have the confidence to make his decision and stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
A dog who lacks confidence.
Negotiating a corner or something.
Yeah. And if a dog is not chosen to have another career with a different kind of agency, we have a huge waiting list of people who want to adopt our dogs once they've gotten to that point. They're 2 years old and fully trained, but they're just not guide dog material, and we have a huge long waiting list of people who want to adopt those dogs.
Yeah, but
so no dog goes without a happy home.
Mm-hmm. Boy.
That's real important to us. Too.
Oh, yes. Tell me about your dog. You said that you had one and it retired. What would make a dog retire, and where does it go after it's retired?
Well,
you said
they age out. As we get older, we slow down. As a dog gets older, they slow down, but it happens faster because dogs age faster than we do.
Right.
So when Rowan, who she and I were matched together when she was about 2, when she was about 10, I sensed that, you know, it was getting harder and harder for her to keep up the pace, and so I allowed her to retire, and we kept her as a pet. So she stayed with us. She laid down the law when Flyer and I come home from training. Rowan's rule of the house was, what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine.
Mm-hmm.
That was her thing. Not everybody is able to keep their retired dog because sometimes, you know, someplace people can't keep pets, or I happen to have a husband, so the dog wasn't going to be by herself all day. And if people are unable to keep the dog, they may choose a family that wants to adopt it. They may offer it to the puppy raiser raiser. That's an option. If they don't really have what they feel is a viable option, we'll help them find a home for the retiring dog.
Oh, yeah. They are so miraculous, and they deserve so much of our attention and love and appreciation. It's just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a break for a minute. Usually I do another commercial for Garnett Publishing, but tonight I would like to ask listeners to send me stories, either email me or write me at home, stories that have touched your heart about animals. Now, this is not just about your own pet, but experiences that you've had with animals that have touched you deeply or have actually changed your life. I would like to enter some of these stories in my new book called The Sacred Knowledge of Animals. And you can email me your story, and please email me your phone number, too, so I can talk to you about it and get some more details, because I'd like to include it in my new book, because I believe that animals just touch everybody's life, and we would be totally lost without them. My email address is talktopets@aol.com. There will be an announcement. If you signed up for my newsletter, there will be another announcement in my newsletter asking and requesting for personal stories about your experience with an animal that has made a deep impact in your life. Becky, it's really not hard to fall in love with a guide dog when you see one. It's really hard for me to resist them. When I worked at the VA hospital, there was a woman there who was blind, and she had a husband who would go with her, and she had a wonderful, wonderful lab as her dog. And when I passed her in the hall, I would go, "Oh, what a beautiful dog. Is it okay if I pet him?" And the husband would bark at me and go, "That's a working dog. Get away," you know, and stuff like that. And I understood what he meant. He didn't have to be so cursed.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I understood what he meant. But for an animal lover like myself, it's really hard not to respond to such a creature. Now, even if you're not blind, if I see you with an animal, I always ask permission to pet the dog, both of the person and the dog, because sometimes dogs don't want to be petted.
Right. Yes, that's very wise.
What should we do when we're in the presence of a guide dog so that we're not offending people?
Well, you know what? The best thing to do is to interact with the person and not the dog. And as an animal lover and a dog lover, and I love other people's guide dogs too. It's hard. But it's real important that you interact with the person and not the dog, that you ask for permission to pet the dog and respect the person's answer. If the person says, you know, "I'm sorry, this isn't a good time," or "No, my dog is working," or I wish you wouldn't," then, you know, you need to respect that, even though, you know, emotionally you're, like, really wanting to interact with that dog. One way to think of it, especially if the dog is working, if the person is walking along holding on to the harness handle, the dog is working, and you distracting that dog by petting it is the same as somebody coming up from behind you and putting something over your eyes.
Yeah.
Because the dog's focus is now off its work and on the person who wants to pet it. And that puts the blind person in danger.
Yeah,
so that's
why it's
so important that people not interact with the working dog and not interact with the dog without asking permission, and really for the dignity of the person to talk to the person about the dog rather than, you know, make a big fuss. I mean, you'd be amazed at what people do. Well, maybe you wouldn't. But, I mean, I've had people, you know, perfectly normal people act like total idiots in front of my dog.
The word.
You know, people getting down on their knees and, you know, whistling and making noises and barking at my dog and all this kind of thing. If they think it's funny, if they think they're being cute, if they're just, "Oh, what a great dog." Most of us like hearing nice things said about our dogs, but, you know, our dog and I and my dog are a team. We're like one.
Right.
And, you know, it's just real important to interact with the person. My least favorite remark is someone who comes up to me and says, "Oh, I know I'm not supposed to pet your dog. I just can't help myself," and they're petting away. Or people who think they can sneak a pet because I'm blind and I might not know they did it. I mean, that's just not... People do that stuff, though.
I know. I know they do. But you can understand, too, that people... the animals are so irresistible that some people just have to touch, whether they're, you know, they're allowed to or not. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they just can't control themselves.
Well...
But
you know, they need
dangerous.
To try harder.
Yeah, try harder, because what you're saying is absolutely important. And I didn't really realize it myself until this man barked at me.
Yeah, well, that wasn't really an appropriate reaction either.
No, I've seen this lady. She worked at the hospital. She's one of the secretaries,
yeah.
And she has a Braille typewriter and so on. And I've sat next to her at lunch and stuff. It sort of startled me, but it also woke me up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you doing? This is, you know, this dog is my eyes,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, don't butt in. This is our relationship.
Yeah. Most people, if you give them the opportunity, will let you, are happy to talk about their dogs, and you know, many will let you pet their dogs if it's a convenient time. But if they're in a hurry, you know, if they're having a bad day, everybody, I'm sure all of you listeners have been in a situation where somebody came up to you and asked you something or wanted something that under normal circumstances you would have been happy to do, but they caught you at that wrong time. And sometimes that happens when you approach someone with a guide dog or even with a pet dog where, you know, it just, it wasn't the right time.
Yeah, like right, not
you
right.
You can't take it personally, but, you know, I always tell our students, you know, they need to, we all as guide dog users need to remember that we may be the first guide dog user that person has ever met, and what they think about guide dog users might have a lot to do with their first impression from us. So, you know, we need to be conscious of that. But, you know, we also don't have to, we don't have to do things that we don't think are the right thing, you know, for our dog or for the moment.
What do you say, Becky, when somebody comes up and says, can I pet your dog, and you don't really want them to do it?
I'll just say, I'm sorry, right now he's working and it's not a good time.
Oh, that's a good answer.
Yeah. But if, you know, if it's okay, if I'm in a situation where I have a few seconds to stop, I'll say, you know, thank you for asking, and yes, you may. It's the people who don't ask that I tend to be a little bit more impatient with.
Yeah, that's like somebody coming up to you in the grocery store when you're selecting a head of lettuce and putting their hands on you.
Well, you know, we always used to compare it. Yeah, it was. I don't know if people still do it, but people used to think it was fine to walk up to a pregnant woman and put their hand on her belly, you know.
Today, years ago, people did that kind of stuff, but today, if you did that, they would call security.
Yeah.
Because people today don't, you know,
people have a thing about their personal space.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. Right, it's an invasion of your mm-hmm. personal space, and it's much better to say, excuse me, mm-hmm. you know, is this head of, how do you pick your head of lettuce? Is it, you know, what do you look for in a head of lettuce, rather than putting your hands on somebody?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
We'd like to invite callers to call in. This is a very, very informative and interesting topic, and the number again is 877-876-5227. And ask Becky, you know, some questions about guide dogs that you have in your mind and that you didn't know, because training a guiding dog is completely different than training a different type of an animal. We had a guest on about 6 weeks ago who was training animal-assisted therapy dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they had done some research on them to show that animal-assisted therapy not only lowers the blood pressure and it gives wonderful positive physiological responses to the patient, but also to the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any knowledge of any studies that have been done on guide dogs to show how they react or how it affects them? That would be an interesting study.
Yeah, I'm sure that there have been studies like that. I haven't seen them, but one thing that people ask a lot is, you know, do the dogs really enjoy their work?
Very much.
And they do. And if you watch a working guide dog, the tail is up, you know, they're watching what they're doing. They're happy. They're getting praised for doing good work. When you see a team working together that is really connected, you see that dog lives for that. And it's an amazing experience.
Yeah, that's what my friend Becky said when she's interviewed, telepathically interviewed dogs. They're very serious. They're very dedicated, very joyful about assisting their person. It becomes their mission
mm-hmm.
In life to assist a person in what I call their spiritual journey, which is the way we deal with our life and our relationships and how we go about being as creative as we can. And it's like they help us on our life mission, which is really a spiritual mission to evolve and to grow. Have you ever had an instance where a particular dog and a particular person just don't seem to be compatible and you replace it with a different dog?
It has happened. It doesn't happen very often, but it happens. Sometimes the dog, the pull is too hard. Sometimes the person and the dog don't connect for some reason that nobody would have anticipated. sometimes the person has a preconceived idea of what they want in a dog, and the dog that they meet, you know, might not fit that exactly. It happens occasionally, but not all that often.
Yeah, it actually happens when people adopt babies, too.
Yeah.
For one reason or another, the two of them don't have compatible energy, and there's no penalty to say, you know, this child and I am not clicking. There's something I don't feel that I can bond with it, or it's like we have two different temperaments or something, and they just give you another child, and then they place that child with someone else, and for that the someone else, it works perfectly. But it happens with humans in adoption, too.
One of the things that is hard for people, especially, is we call it the second dog syndrome. When your first dog retires and you're coming back to class to meet your second guide dog, you have all of that history with the first dog. And it's inevitable that however many dogs you ultimately work with, you're always going to compare them to previous dogs.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes that's where it's the hardest because you're sort of, you know, you're dealing with the loss of that relationship with the first dog, and you're meeting the second dog. And I run what we call a grieving and loss group for the people who are retraining. People are coming in to get their next successor dog. And one of the things that I always tell them was told to me by one of our graduates, and she was talking about how when she was pregnant with her second child, she expressed concern that she wouldn't be able to love her second child the way she loved her first child. And her grandmother, a very wise woman, said, "Your love doesn't divide among your children, it multiplies." And what people who work with guide dogs will tell you is that as they work with the dog number two, dog number three, we've had people have as many as eight or nine over a period of years, is that that is in fact true, that each dog finds its own place in your heart, finds its own place in your life, and has its own personality and its own place that nothing else can change or take away. And we have an amazing capacity to do that.
Yes. You know, it's the same thing when you have an animal that dies and you're very devoted to it, and you go out and you try to find another animal just like it. And that poor animal just loses its sense of identity because it knows that you want it to be like somebody else. And after a while, they get very disturbed and very unhappy. And then when I counsel them, they say to me, "She doesn't like me for me. She wants me to be, Georgie or her other pet." And I feel really bad for them. And I tell the person that this is a new life, a new entity. Just open up your heart and let yourself love this dog for who it is.
Exactly. And we never refer to our dogs as replacement dogs because there's no such thing.
No.
There really isn't.
No. It's like, you know, it's like having a child and having it die, and then you go out and you adopt one and saying, "Well, if you're a replacement for this one."
No
such thing.
That doesn't happen.
Mm-mm.
It doesn't happen.
How do you apply to be a puppy raiser or a volunteer? How do you do that?
Well, there are a number of opportunities. The best way to do it is to go to one of our two websites. To be a puppy raiser, to get more information on puppy raising, puppy socialization, and all of that. Another way that people volunteer is our breeding dogs, our broods and studs, are not kept in the kennel. They're kept with foster families in the local area within an hour or two of our breeding center, so that they have normal dog lives, except when they're called upon to reproduce. So we have volunteer families that do that as well. But that would be for people who live generally in the New York tri-state area, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey. But you can go to the website for the Canine Development Center, which is cdc.guidingeyes.org. People who are interested in donating to Guiding Eyes or learning about volunteer opportunities or reading profiles of our graduates, getting a real feel for what we do here and opportunities to help at Guiding Eyes,
uh-huh.
you can go to guidingeyes.org. That's just GUIDINGEYES.org. There's a ton of stuff up on the website about Guiding Eyes, about guide dogs, about our graduates, and all kinds of information about our upcoming walkathon in October, which is one of our two big annual fundraising events. So people can go to both of those websites and get lots of good information.
Tell us about
and ways
the,
to get involved.
What did you say you have in October? It's
we have a walkathon. This will be our 31st, I believe, annual walkathon. Guiding Eyes is we're celebrating 50 years since our first team graduated in 1956 this year.
Oh, my.
We were founded in 1954, graduated our first guide dog team, twins actually, in 1956, and we've been going strong ever since. And we have a walkathon at a local state park on Columbus, the Sunday of Columbus Day weekend every year. And it's a big, we call it a big family reunion because graduates come in, graduates help with fundraising. They get pledges and they sell raffle tickets, and we have people coming in from all over the country for that weekend. So we have a big reunion banquet, and then all of the graduates and their dogs and puppy raisers and their dogs and anybody from the general public and their animals come to this FDR State Park on that Sunday of Columbus Day weekend, and we have a blast. We have a really good time.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And you, where is it held?
It's at FDR State Park, which is in Yorktown Heights, New York,
uh-huh.
which is just north of New York City.
How does one apply? Supposing that I lost my sight and I needed some assistance, how would I go about applying?
There are a couple things you could do.
Okay.
You could call our toll-free number, which is 800-942-0149, and ask to speak to someone in the admissions department. You can go to our website, guidingeyes.org, and go to the Apply Online section. They could call me, and I could help them get information on how to get started.
Uh-huh.
The prerequisites basically are that you need to be legally blind, obviously,
okay.
Which does not mean totally blind. It just means that you have to meet the definition for legal blindness.
Legally blind, right.
You need to have had some training in what we refer to as orientation and mobility, which means that you need to learn to travel safely using a white cane. The skills that you receive when you have that training are the skills that help you to orient yourself to your environment by using your other senses, and all of that kind of thing. So while we don't expect people to be, you know, world-class cane travelers, people need to be able to travel a route or two safely with a white cane. They need to be able to make traffic judgments at intersections, that kind of thing. And generally, by the time a person comes to Guiding Eyes to get a guide dog, they've had some kind of rehabilitation and training and that kind of thing if they've lost their sight recently.
Does it require prior experience having a dog?
Oh, no. No, not at all. And we've had people come in who've never been around dogs at all. And, you know, a student in class learns all about working with a dog in harness. They also learn all about how to care for a dog. Grooming, feeding,
potty training,
medical care. Well, the dogs are all housebroken well before they come back to Guiding Eyes for training. But how to learn to recognize potential problems. You learn how to read your dog's signals. And you also learn a routine that helps you keep your dog consistent on a consistent schedule.
Structure is very important.
Yeah, one of the most important things about being a guide dog user is being consistent with your dog, both in and out of harness.
What kind of thing would disqualify a person?
One of the most important things for people who have some residual or remaining vision is that it's very important that if they're going to work with a guide dog, they need to learn to trust their dog and not use their vision to second-guess the dog or to steer the dog. And that's hard for people to learn sometimes. So that might disqualify a person.
Is it hard? Did you go through training to use a stick?
A white cane?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I've been blind all my life, so I came up through the school system that way.
Oh, you've been blind all your life?
Yes.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
So you use other faculties, other senses to determine where and your orientation in space, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to figure out how to get away from static here. Okay. You learn to use your ears, primarily your sense of smell. If you're walking down the street and you're trying to find Starbucks,
mm-hmm.
you know, or McDonald's, those are mm-hmm. pretty easy to find using your sense of smell.
Hmm. So it's like any other disability. Pardon me?
You learn to adapt.
Yeah, and you can function pretty well. I had a brother that was deaf, and my father, when he was born, said, oh, well, we'll have to buy a farm and make him a farmer. Well, I want you to know that he grew up to be one of the best carpenters in Cleveland. He was a finishing carpenter. He was outstanding, extremely artistic, and he was the first deaf person to ever join the Carpenters Union, and he blazed the trail for other deaf people. So just because you have a deficiency in one sensory modality doesn't mean that you're deficient in all of them.
That's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely true. But I think I do a training program with the local police academy a couple times a year, teaching police trainees how to respond to people with disabilities, both as crime victims and also, I suppose, as perpetrators, but primarily as crime victims. And one of the things that we've learned in the process of this is that if you ask people which sense they fear losing the most, the vast majority of people are afraid of being blind.
Yes.
We're very visual culture.
Yeah.
But what you discover,
what
you discover is there's lots of things out there to help you adapt. Now even the computers are adaptable. So I have screen reading software on my, it reads everything on the screen. I have full access to everything on the internet. So, you know, getting information is a lot easier.
Wait,
of course, you can't drive.
Access? You have full access to everything on the internet?
Mm-hmm, pretty much.
Could you tell us about that?
Well, basically what it is you have a software program, and there are a couple of them. Around that big ones that people use one or the other of. And you put that on your computer and it reads all the text on your screen. So graphics can be a little bit tough, but you know, if there's text labeling or text on the website, you can read it.
Well, the genius that invented that should go directly to heaven. Because that is really putting your heart into something worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's, and the other thing that, you know, that people realize, and as someone who's been blind all my life, my perspective is a little bit different, but every class that comes into Guiding Eyes, I meet people who, you know, have lost their sight as adults, young adults, within a year or the last year and a half or 2 years. And, you know, I have learned so much about how people adapt, because you've got to go back and you have to learn how to do ordinary things differently.
Yes.
And people do it, you know, because the choice of not doing it is really not a viable choice. And you know, people pick themselves up, they discover things about themselves, and they build new lives. And you know, working with a guide dog often gives them the confidence to go out there and do it, because you're not alone anymore, and you have someone that you can trust 24/7. And it's an amazing experience. It's been amazing for me, because I've always been this.
That is a rare thing, to have someone you can trust 24/7.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's possible with humans.
I'm not sure.
It certainly is with animals. Animals mm-hmm. are, they're miraculous in themselves. They're, mm-hmm. they're miraculous beings. Their little souls are so wonderful and pry us. You know, they try to help us as much as we can, as much as we're able. I talk a lot about that in my book, about, you know, the difference between the way animals think and the way humans think. Mm-hmm. And it's really amazing how evolved they are. Tell us again your how could one become actively involved in leaving an endowment or something in their will for Guiding Eyes?
Well, we have a plan giving department, and if you go to our website, which is guidingeyes.org, there's information about it up there. Again, you can call our toll-free number at 1-800-942-0149 and ask to speak to Nancy Lothrop or just someone in the plan giving department.
Okay.
And they will they have a newsletter that they send out, and they can send you lots of information about, you know, different ways that you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not real good at that particular aspect of this other than that I know who they can talk to who is real good at it.
Yeah, you almost have to have some sort of legal background to,
to
do that, because when money is exchanged or left for any reason, there are certain things that you have to go through.
Right,
I can't think of a more worthwhile cause.
Yeah, well,
this
you know.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And like I say, it's wonderful for me to work for an organization that provides something that can change people's lives.
The fact that I have experienced
that myself is even better.
This is wonderful talking to you, Becky. I just love it because I love when I was a psychologist, I worked with the handicapped, mentally retarded, mm-hmm. and brain damaged, and deficiencies of all kinds, and I loved it. But also to work with animals is really the joy of my life.
I can tell.
Such wonderful beings. I don't know why they think we deserve their help, honestly.
Well, they certainly deserve our love.
Oh, do they ever.
Yeah. It's amazing. I'm very much involved with advocacy for people with guide dogs and their rights of access and that kind of thing. And as part of that, I've learned a lot in the last few years about other types of assistance dogs, dogs that an assistance dog or a service dog is defined as a dog that is specifically trained to do a task that assists a person with a disability.
Right.
Guide dogs are trained to guide. Hearing dogs are trained to respond for a person who's deaf. Service dogs may do any number of things related to everything from pulling wheelchairs to picking up objects to providing balance support. To respond appropriately if a person has a seizure. People who have seizure disorders may have a dog who instinctively senses when they're going to have a seizure, or at least recognizes when they do have a seizure and is taught to get help by any number of ways, whether it's pushing a button to a lifeline or, you know, getting another person who's at the other end of a walkie-talkie or radio device or, you know, to get help. But the key is that the dog is trained to do something that mitigates a person's disability.
Oh, yeah, and saves their life.
Yeah, and there are a number of wonderful organizations that train assistance dogs other than for guide work. And we all, you know, we all kind of are looking to one another and working together to teach the public about the rights of access of a person with an assistance dog.
Mm-hmm.
Under the Americans with Disabilities Act, a person with a guide dog or a hearing dog or a service dog cannot be denied access to any place that the general public is allowed.
Oh, you can tell just in the past 5 years or so,
mm-hmm.
every place has, I mean, every street, every sidewalk has a service area for wheelchairs. And
right.
It's
right. And you'll see on
a long way.
Yeah, you'll see on signs occasionally, especially in restaurants, no pets allowed except guide dogs or assistance dogs or something.
Yes, I've seen that too.
Yeah. So, you know, and to deny a person with a guide dog those rights is sort of pushing them back to where they were trying to get away from. Particularly in terms of transportation.
I can't imagine denying a person a right to not be fully present in their lifetime.
Yeah.
To be fully accepted everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Animals are just, they're really something. They're really a gift.
They are.
Oh,
they are.
Gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Becky, I have a little announcement, and I want to thank you for so much for being our guest tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is very, very dear to my heart and to the heart of all animal lovers. We just appreciate them so much. We know them not only in their physical sense, but in their spiritual sense. And I always say that I learned more about God from my animals than I ever did going to church, because they give you the experience of completeness, of fullness, of being totally accepted and loved. There's nothing like it on the earth. Tell us how we contribute in a small way. So if there are donors out there, rather than writing their next check to the APL, how can we do that to the guiding dog, for the guiding eyes for the dog?
Well, you can make a check out to Guiding Eyes for the Blind.
Uh-huh.
And send it to Guiding Eyes for the Blind,
uh-huh.
611 Granite, Granite, Springs Road, and that's Yorktown, Yorktown, Heights, New York, 10598. Or you can go to the website, www.guidingeyes.org.
Oh, it's on your homepage, too.
Right. If you're interested in the puppy raising aspect of it, or more information about that, you can go to www.cdc.guidingeyes.org, or you can just call our toll-free number at 1-800-942-0149, and we'll put you in touch with the right person.
Do you remember when they started the March of Dimes?
Yeah, sort of.
Because Franklin Roosevelt had polio.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would like to start a March of Dollars for the Guiding Eyes for the Blind. I think that would be a wonderful, if everybody donated a dollar or $5, that would be a generous beginning. It's a matter of making your place aware, people aware, and in appreciation for all the hard work that you do. I can't thank you enough for being here tonight.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Okay, this is Dr. Agnes Thomas. We are out of time. And thank you for listening. And be sure to write in and let us know if you would like to continue this type of programming on bbsradio.com. Good night.